Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the NRL Bulldogs Fans Podcast.
Welcome to the NRL Bulldogs Fans Podcast. My name's Matt. I'm sitting here with Scott. Scott, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So another loss.
We'll get to that later. Big news from the weekend. Bulldogs through to three grand finals over the course of the weekend. Fantastic results in the junior grades and junior representative fixtures. The New South Wales Women's Premiership, let's jump straight to it. The Bulldogs defeated the Illawarra Steelers 16 points to 8 at Leichhardt Oval on Sunday. They move to next week's grand final against the Mounties. What a season it's been for them. Mona Lisa Soliola with a double in that game against the Illawarra to put the Dogs into the grand final.
How good is that? First time, you know, back into the competition and then into a grand final.
Yeah, a year out because we were with Mounties before and back in it this year. Yeah, up against the we weren't fans of the partnership between the two clubs, Scotty, so perhaps a bit of a grudge match of sorts. I'll tell you what, though, the under-19 Tasha Gale Cup, they backed it up as well. 28-0 victory over Illawarra Steelers at Leichhardt Oval this time on Saturday. They moved to next week's grand final against the Indigenous Academy Sydney Roosters. It was a tight first half. The Dogs only took in a 6-0 lead at halftime, but came out firing in the second half to pile on 5 unanswered tries with winger Charlotte Aoife also bagging a double there.
Impressive, because I thought the Bears were the team to beat, and they're not there.
Yep, they'd be disappointed with that.
Oh, but, that's the Harvey Norman's Women Premiership, sorry. That's what I'm, for that one.
It's good but,
yeah,
to I see.
The Bulldogs versus Bears. The girls are leading the way at the club, aren't they?
They are. It's good to see the investment the club's making into the female game. It's showing on the field there in both the New South Wales Women's Premiership and the Harvey Norman. Sorry, New South Wales Women's Premiership and Natasha Gale Cup. Along with the news of the 2025 bid to have an NRLW team, signs are looking good for the Bulldogs there, and the Centre of Excellence will go a long way to helping that as well. Well, in the Harold Matthews Cup, it was another victory for the Bulldogs and another grand final, this time beating the Penrith Panthers 30-16 at Leichhardt Oval on Saturday. This was announced at the NRL game, and, fantastic result. I don't think a lot of people were expecting it, though, up against the Penrith Panthers.
No, they're meant to be the winners. I'd say they're meant to be the hot favourites to win that competition and then knocked out in the prelim. Disappointed for the Panthers, but...
They're gone in the Harolds, mate, and the SG ball. I think they lost to the Knights in the SG ball there. The Panthers got off to a fast start in this game. Kyle Raven scoring in the opening 2 minutes. So not looking good for the Bulldogs there, but returning serve for a Seve. Both teams went into the second half with 2 tries, and the Panthers only down by a missed conversion. The Bulldogs, however, proved too strong in the second half, adding an additional 3 tries to the Panthers' 1.
That's the ending. You know, Panthers are a class outfit all the way down, aren't they, from their grades. And, you know, if you start the season, I was thinking Panthers are going to win Harold's Mets, Panthers are going to win SG Ball. So when you beat a team and when they're in their Harold's Mets there, and then your team, I was like, oh, this is going to be an uphill battle, backs against the wall type of thing. Maybe that's where the Bulldogs are at its best, and maybe that's hopefully signs to come in the future.
Yeah, look, these grades could change every year quite vastly, but Penrith are always always a side to beat in these grades anyway. After the year they had last year, you sort of expected that Penrith dominance to go on, and we've had a couple of regular season games as well in these grades where the Panthers were just dominating teams, including the Bulldogs. So for them to miss out in both grades was quite a bit of a shock. But how good for the Bulldogs, 3 teams into next week's grand finals.
Yeah, and I got the kickoff times here and location if you want to run through. So Harold Matz will kick off at 12:45 PM at Leichhardt Oval. Like you said, Bulldogs vs Knights.
What day is this?
This Saturday. Saturday, so 12:45 Harold Matz, Bulldogs vs Knights. Then I'll just after that with the SG Ball, which the only game doesn't involve a Bulldogs team in it, but that follows at 2:30 PM, Knights vs Eels. 4:15 PM, Rooster, the Indigenous Academy Roosters versus the Bulldogs. And then 6 p.m., the Harvey Norman and your main event at Leichhardt Oval, Bulldogs versus the Mounties at 6 p.m. So imagine getting three out of that. Imagine getting those three that are in it. But what a year for them all. You know, making grand final, not easy. Easy feat, but yeah, one more job to do. One more.
Congratulations are going to go out to those in the head office and the admin team and everyone involved in the junior rep. Well, the junior development pathway is a fantastic result for the club there. And before we move on to the NRL, let's just throw in the jersey flag as well. So Scotty's getting the ladder ready for us. The Bulldogs had another impressive win, this time against the Cronulla Sharks. 36 points to 10. Denny Gabriel, the centre, scored a hat-trick. And winger Jonathan Sewer, a double. They both play on the left edge there. So five tries between the left winger and the left centre. Sewer also kicked four from five in a very dominant display at Belmore.
Yeah, it was a Friday night game at Belmore, wasn't it? Game under lights. And it was the Bulldogs now moved to second on the ladder. They've played seven, won. Oh, sorry. Yeah, played seven. They've won five. They've lost two, and they've had a bye. They're just below the Roosters and above the Sharks, funny enough. Sharks sliding down and the Bulldogs taking the second spot off them with that win. So
there you go. What a effort there. There's a couple of names to look out for. Jonathan Sewer, his name's been brought up out of the Jersey Flag games quite a few times already. And now Denny Gabriel with the hat-trick as well. So we'll definitely keep an eye out for those names going forward throughout the season in whatever grade they may end up popping up in. Another grade, Scotty, that the results wasn't the best for the club, though, was the New South Wales Cup. So the first loss that we're going to talk about, 28 points to 10 to the Newtown Jets in, well, you've got to say that the Bulldogs team has been a bit disrupted with the injuries happening in first grade, the players going up and down and all around and all that sort of stuff. So it's very disrupting. Newtown Jets are a really good side, obviously, in the New South Wales Cup. They were third coming into this game. I think they remain there. But a couple of some bad habits that were spoken about before, Scotty, in this grade, in and out of games a little bit.
Yeah, I've watched the Parramatta game 2 weeks ago. Completely nothing really happening for the first like 25 minutes of that game. And you look at Parramatta, they're not having a great year. It could have been a game where we could have really, you know, boosted that for and against. I know you don't have that attitude, but both teams just looked like they were disinterested for a long time in that first half before the Bulldogs turned it on. And you think, what if they just had that attitude from kickoff? But yeah, disruptions, but not just the disruptions done by the top grade side before the injuries and players moving up and taking the opportunities, which is, you know, sometimes a positive thing, because when players go back down, they come with more NRL experience under their belt, which could be a better thing later in the year for our New South Wales Cup side if our injuries return, and hopefully no more injuries this year. But the other disruptive thing is having a quality fullback, Joash Papali'i, on the interchange bench and playing in the middle.
Yeah, we brought this up last week in the game, and the Eels are not really sure what's happening there. Ola Apu was named at fullback for this game, but Rajad played fullback.
Again, which is his second game in a row, he's played fullback.
Papali'i back to the bench, played a bit of hooker off the bench. I don't know if this is with a view towards the NRL, the top grade, if players need to step up or what's happening, but it does look like it's disrupted the lineup a little bit. And not that I don't think we probably haven't done a whole 80-minute performance in this grade anyway this year yet, but it does look very disruptive at the moment. We'll go through the quick tries. The Bulldogs led 10 points to 6 at halftime, scoring the first two tries, one for Harry Hayes and one for Blake Wilson, but the Jets returned in the 36th minute with Connor Tracy scoring a very nice try, sidestepping everyone, beating about eight defenders on his way to the try line. And from that point on, really, it was Newtown Jets for the rest of the game, running out 28 points to 10 winners. There was a sin bin to Magulius with 10 minutes to go in that first half. And from that point, for some reason, that was the catalyst for the Jets.
Yeah, no, it's like sometimes when, you know, negative things happen to you, it kind of puts the team together more. You know, everyone's responsibility lifts and, you know, but yeah, usually a sin bin happens. The team who loses the player, usually the team that suffers, but the Bulldogs just didn't know how to play against 12 by the looks of it. It was just, there's too much room on the field or something. I don't know what the go was, but it could have been the disruptive spine. I got to go back, like Josh Papali'i, I think what I've seen of him, and I've seen a lot of New South Cup games this year attending and also watching on Fox League, when he is a quality fullback. He's young, but he's a quality fullback. Don't mess with him. Just let him go at fullback.
His last few games when he has played fullback weren't as good as the games prior to that.
Yeah, I'd say so.
He did drop a bit, but I don't think he did much or anything really.
What's 18-19?
To be removed out of that position. So that's interesting to see what happens with the team list and name this week. We're recording on a Monday night, just so you know. Due to different things that we've got on this week. So interested to see what type of team list comes up, both in the New South Wales Cup and in the NRL. We might actually have a few things to say about the NRL team list as well. But just pulling up the ladder for the knock-on effect, New South Wales Cup, the Bulldogs are now into second spot. Sorry about that, Scotty. Dogs down to second. We were first at the end of that game, but the Warriors absolutely destroyed somebody on the weekend, and now they're in first. So we lose our first spot there. So second in the Jersey flag, and now the New South Wales Cup as well, Scotty.
Yeah, which is not bad, but to answer, the Warriors pumped the Eels 48-4. Which I thought it was the Eels. I just had to double check because I was looking at the results last night. And I just wanted to double check it was the Eels. I didn't want to say anything just in case it wasn't. But that could have been how terrible the Eels played at Combank against the Bulldogs in New South Wales Cup. Could have been a similar score that the Bulldogs would have had and could have really, you know, boosted their for and against. You know, for and against is key. Could be the difference between first and second. Could be the difference between making top four. Which is the top five competition, by the way. So,
well, it's always good to see the the Eels. The Dolphins, where did that come from? It's always good to see the Eels cop a scoreline like that. So, well done to the Warriors. Unfortunately, taking our first spot there, though. And, Scotty, we've done a little bit arse about this week just because of the good news that's happening in that the junior development pathway grades. However, let's move on to the NRL. It's another loss, 33 points to 20 to the Cronulla Sharks. Serrano loses three games in a row for the first time in his career.
Yeah, I reckon there's more positives. Like, you gotta really take it. 12 players out. Does all 12 of them play top grade? Probably not, but then you start to think, so like Chris Platoa would probably jag a bench spot with the injuries, the way it's happening, with the players who are out. So even our depth of our players are out. To push the Sharks were a finalist. They came second last year, didn't they? Off the top of my head.
I'll check.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they came second. I know they went bang-bang out of the finals. But they're a quality side. They have, on paper, with that the two sides, I was thinking if we could, you know, keep them within 16, I thought that would have been a decent result. I thought it was a decent result. I thought there was 3 points in the match that could have went a little bit different. That could have changed a little bit. One, Nicho Hynes kneeing people in the back.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. I think those may be contentious issues because my opinion maybe changed a little bit, Scotty, since the game. However, what I wanted to get into first, though, maybe more Bulldogs focus, is it time that we start changing a few things up? Now, Serrano may have already started that last week with Burton to 7. And it was apparent, I think, earlier in the game that Burton seemed to be at first receiver quite often, but I think that fell away the longer the game went. Do we need more changes to spike it up?
I think we need, this might be controversial in some, I think we need more Joshy Reynolds on the field a bit longer than 20 minutes. I don't know.
Well,
can he handle that? Not too sure at his old age.
Yeah. Even if it's 40 minutes, hey, like, I'm going to call it. I'd like to see Reynolds at 7 and Burnham at 6.
There you go. I was somewhat happy.
I'd even like, sorry, I was going to say, I'd even like to see it for half a half. Oh, sorry, half a game.
Yeah.
So I was
relatively happy with Flanagan. Like, he put in a grabber kick, which should have led into a try. Like, it was just, you know, eyes up football. And that was like the first time we've seen him in a long time. See an opportunity in a little grubber kick, what should have ended up in a try, just did fell short of being a try. So I saw some positives out of Flanagan. But yeah, Joshy Reynolds digs into the line. But the only problem is if you play him at that lock, I don't know, you've got to find a position for him. If you play him at lock against Souths, he didn't have a good game. Yes, he had the good old squirrel grip. Didn't help. But there was a few times where he was trying to tackle legs out and people jump, like, I think I couldn't remember who it was, but I'm pretty sure he got like hurdled at one stage where they jumped him and they made a break from it. But that's also passion coming out. Like, he was trying to chop people over.
Yeah. And
that's the good with the bad with the passion, I guess, is that, you know, sometimes you're going to get it wrong and smack someone in the face accidentally or get hurdled.
I've even liked to see that sort of setup right on seven burner at six, even if it's for 40 minutes. So even if Flanagan and Burden start the game in the halves and then Reynolds comes on at half time for Flanagan. Or some sort of shift, maybe Flanagan to hooker and give Reed 15-minute break or something like that. Because Burden looks at his most dangerous when he's running the ball, for sure. Through the line and creating a break for himself or his support players. But the direction and energy that we have when Reynolds is on compared to when he's not on is chalk and cheese. It's so clear when he's on. And yet he's been playing that lock ball playing role. But if we put him at seven and make him play a similar role in attack, shore up maybe that defensive line with a bigger body at 13, I think, that's something that I would definitely like to see.
You know, it's a fair point. Is that the only change you make, or do we start looking at
another one? Might have touched on it just a tad there. Does Reed Marnie need another hooker on the bench? That's a question that I've started to be coming away with after a couple of different things that have happened. Look, he makes errors that we just weren't seeing from him at his time with Parramatta. On the weekend, there was a big error where he threw the ball along the ground in the second half. And he's done those wild sort of passes a few times now, probably about four times in eight rounds. In last week, when he did that, just killed all momentum of any type of a comeback coming back. We had the momentum through the energy of Reynolds, through the direction of Reynolds. That was all, like, you know, you felt like, yeah, we may be a chance to really fight back here. And then that just let all the air out of the balloon, as they say.
So with the hook, the only other hooker issues we kind of have in New South Cup level is we don't really have anyone in our top 30 at the moment due to a few injuries and stuff. So is that something that you play maybe a Jackson Taupini to take 15 minutes or 20 minutes a hooker, then you can shift him in the back row to then...
Yeah. So yeah, somebody like that, you put up Bailey Haywood, give him a taste of first grade as well. You're only looking for, I'm talking tops 15 minutes.
Yeah, but Jack Stokely could play 15 at hooker, then play 15 in the back row. And that's 30-minute game for him, or 20 minutes of back row, or something like that. Or do you at Josh Reynolds to be that 20-minute hooker?
Not if you've named him at seven, but that's...
No, I'm just saying.
As that, well. The way I would do it, though, Scotty, is I'd interchange. Probably wouldn't do this if you're doing half Flanagan and half Reynolds, but if we're going Reynolds 7, Burden 6, and Reed Marnie 9, you make the interchange for Reed Marnie at halftime, and you put on whoever your hooker's option is going to be, whether it's Reynolds off the bench or Taupini or whoever you got there, and they play tops 15 minutes in the second half. So you bring back Marnie for the last 25 minutes. He's just had a 25-minute sit-down, including halftime. Fresh, to finish off the game.
Yeah, you're using that halftime break as an extension on the break, aren't you? So it's
absolutely. That's how I'd go.
Another thing, too, would we see us also playing with a Farmu Brown when he returns around 11 as a hooker and Josh Reynolds as a lock, or vice versa, where we have like almost two halves or...
If Reynolds is not playing in the halves, you probably don't want all three of them in the same team.
No, but it could be a possibility, though. Like, we've got Jan Ockenbaugh on the bench with Reynolds.
Yeah, well, I'm saying ideally.
No, no, I'm just saying, like,
Reynolds and Brown on the bench.
Yeah, it would be, say, if one's playing lock and the other one's playing hooker, coming on a hooker, that you could fit them together. It'd be very, very odd.
Just with the hooker role, you don't see too many 80-minute hookers these days anyway. And you don't see very less good 80-minute hookers. So sharing that and giving Reed a little bit of a breather, it's not a knock on Reed. I think he'd just be more effective. He might be able to help us close our games better if he's had that little bit of a break.
Just an odd one for you then.
Mm.
That's a little bit off topic. Does Cameron Smith play the 80 now? If he was 28 now?
Or... Yeah, he'd never crash to the great. He would be. Oh. He'd find a way to do it.
Okay, fair enough. I'm just saying it's a bit quicker, you know. He used to be the king of slowing things down when he needed to. I wonder if he could still do it again. That was just off topic.
There's still ways to slow the game down. Maybe Reed hasn't mastered those when he needs it or when the team needs it. I don't know. But you never question a great, in my opinion. I reckon any great of any era would do well in any era.
Well, another change that I would like to see happen
is...
Our interchange bench. It is to say it was rubbish on the weekend would be a fair call, probably the exception of Josh Reynolds.
Mm.
The exception of Josh Reynolds. Ryan Sutton had a game to forget, but I start looking back at some of his games and stuff. He's had a season to forget.
Mm. He hasn't been very good since coming across, to put it politely. But I think last week's game probably highlighted that, unfortunately, for him.
I'm starting to think, sometimes you drop a player and they respond well. Yeah. He could be that player, you know, put him in New South Cup, you know, he shouldn't be there. You should be playing top grade. And then you put him in New South Cup for a couple of weeks and see how they respond. And then we can force his way. But I'm starting to think, I'm taking the Sam Hughes on the interchange bench over Ryan Sutton.
Well, there were some reports that you were saying before we hit record that Frank Lupele's got back to full-time training, so if he's available, perhaps a straight swap there.
Yeah, but then also I'm looking at getting rid of Jaden Ockenbaugh. He's losing every tackle. He's losing every tackle by a mile playing in the middle. Not his fault. If we're going to take this middle stuff seriously, he's got to put it down in the lower grades. He hasn't done anything in the lower grades playing middle. He's played a bit of back row a little bit a few years ago, then shifted to the wing because of an injury, then played really well in the wing. But if we're going to take it seriously, like, he cannot be a bench player middle. Like, we've got Curtis Moran, hands down, better. You could shift Andrew Davey can play in the middle, which I thought he played decently. He played really well against Parra, by the way. He had really good leg speed against Parra, but...
played really well for someone that could have had contact for 3 weeks.
Apparently. No hand strap either.
Yeah, we were all looking for it, yeah.
Yeah, so you had... he could play in the middle. Like I said, Sam Hughes, Curtis Moran, I reckon would be the perfect replacement for Jaden Ockenbaugh, and having Sam Hughes. People say you like what you like, height and Curtis. He wins tackles. He wins tackles. And don't tell me the lack of height, because I've seen him play top grade and be quite effective at it. He's not... Don't worry about height. Who cares that he looks like he's 5'6"? I don't even know if that's correct. But, like, look at Reed. He'll be fine. He'll be fine. He wins most tackles. He dints the line in New South Cup. And then you bring Sam Hughes in. If Franklin Pelle is not available... Sam Hughes is a monster.
Yeah.
He's a monster. Like, so there you go. If you're worried about lack of height, Sam Hughes goes, don't worry, I got you.
He is a big body. I'd like to see a little bit more from Sam. I haven't seen too much of him, to be honest. That loss, Scotty, puts us down to 16th place and the worst points differential in the competition, unfortunately, including the West Tigers, who haven't won a game. So that is... That's not insane. Very good. And you could kind of feel the frustration in the stands. I think the start of the year had been such a better start than maybe most fans were expecting, and we were liking seeing our logo around that eighth spot, that tenth spot, so to see it plummet right down into that sort of bottom four teams is, I think, very disappointing for the fans. I think you could really feel the frustration in the stands, what that loss to Cronulla sort of meant, I think, more overall, even if it was a little bit of subconscious emotions coming up.
Yeah, I think the thing what actually hurts is we were actually in the game and pushing Cronulla. Yes, they got a 13-point win, but I don't think Sharks fans were overly confident until the final, maybe the final five or so.
Yeah.
So they're not, I don't think they're too confident at all.
Sharks have only got one extra win than us this year too.
Yeah, and they're not, either we're seeing teams not being the sides they are last year, or we're actually seeing bottom teams be a much better side than they were last year. And I've got a feeling the bottom teams are a better side than what they were last year. Because even if you look at the Tigers, have won a game, almost beat second. So leading towards the back end of the game. They did win. I think the bottom teams are better. People are saying, oh, what happens? You know, the Sharks are not the threat they were. I think the Sharks are almost the same as they were. It's just that the bottom teams are now better than what they are. They're better coached or...
Yeah, well, we'll see how that plays out. Does the West Tigers Manly game say more about the Tigers or Manly?
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah, and I think the Sharks probably have been a little bit down on what they were, at least in the regular season last year. Not by massive amounts, but just by a tad. But, yeah, the buys are really throwing us out as well. Sharks are in fifth spot, one more win than us who are in 16th. So it's by no means, you know, that we're stuck down there by any stretch of the imagination, and there's definitely positive moves. We could talk about like how the Bulldogs went to halftime at 18-14.
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt like we were not in that first half, yet somehow we fought and scrapped and got our way to 4 points behind at halftime. So like that's a really good sign. Thought we could have put Reynolds on a bit earlier. We needed Reynolds on a bit earlier to mount that comeback. But then we shot ourselves in the foot as well. So the positives, I think we are defending better this year as well, but we shot ourselves in the foot in the second half by letting Cronulla open up that gap straight away in the second half.
Yeah. No, then we get the 2 points and then Will Kennedy goes on a bang, bang.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, we sort of hurt ourselves that way. That second try from Will Kennedy, like, great effort in the air by Will, but how they made that many metres off a set, like, we've got to look at our defence there.
Oh,
made 70-metre set after points. Terrible, terrible. It was like watching Newcastle pair for golden point.
They were marching up.
That's right. So there's a couple of things there. You mentioned that they've got 12 injuries, so... Hopefully some of those players start to trickle back over the next few weeks and that really helps us improve the performances. Even Serrato, I think, at the press conference afterwards, sort of for the first time, sort of mentioned that. Not that he was using it as an excuse, but he was saying that along the lines of there's certain players that are missing that we spent all preseason sort of working towards, and those players aren't there. So sort of learning on the run with the players that are out there now. So hopefully those players, we need those players to be back as soon as possible. No prizes for guessing who, eh?
Mm.
You kick cars, you add our cars. Even Karaz, I think that's been a massive loss. The amount of meters that he makes in a game, we've been waxing lyrical about it this year. We really missed that on the weekend as well.
Well, he's was leading the daily, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was after three rounds.
It's still leading the daily, yeah. But as a dominant winger, and then he's not, his quiet games are still cranking 130, 140.
Mm.
So, like, even on a quiet day, that he was still carting well over 100 metres for his team. So,
All right, let's go to our points of the year award and give our points for last week, and then we can go into some of those contentious moments that you want to bring up, Scotty.
There'll be a few.
Do you want to start the points?
Yeah, I've given 1 point to a player who I think he's having a fantastic year and he's really been consistent if he's in the middle or the edge. I've given it to Corey Waddell. He's played 73 minutes, 15 runs, 145 run meters. He is one of three who've made over 100 meters, but he made 145 compared to Maxi King and Tevita Pengo Jr., who just got over the 100 mark. 57 post contact meters, two tackle breaks, a line break, of course, which is the try he scored as well. And 37 tackles with one miss. I think that's some really good stats for your back rower.
Well, you can't argue with that one. You've gone 2 points for Braden Burns.
I've gone 2 points for Braden Burns. How good is it to see him back in the side? I'm a big fan of Braden. I think he should be in our top 17 every week. People would say where? I would say center.
Well, off the back of the stats that you just wrote out, Scotty, I've given Braden Burns my 1 point for this week.
So bonus points for Braden.
So he gets a bonus point. Straight up to 4 points for Braden Burns. I won't repeat what you've just said, but yeah, I agree with what you said, and I've gone 1 point for Braden Burns. Let's move on to your one-pointer.
My one-pointer was Corey Waddell. That was the stats I read out was Corey Waddell's stats.
Oh, I must have...
Two points is Braden Burns.
Must have fell asleep there. So you announced 2 points for Braden Burns and 1 point for Corey Waddell.
This is an audio. Yeah, I got 1 point Corey Waddell, 2 points Braden Burns.
I don't know what happened there. I literally...
So I'll read Braden Burns' stats out now. He actually played the 80, not 73. I wasn't going to credit a winger for 73. He did 21 runs, 163 meters. That's like Jacob Carranza type of standard there with the meters. 52 post-contact meters. He always looks like a pain in the backside to get down in a tackle. He just seems to be causing headaches. 5 tackle breaks, a line break, an offload, and... 5 tackle breaks, a line break, 4 offloads, 3 tackles. None of them, no missed tackles. And, of course, the try.
Absolutely. So bonus points for Braden Burns. See, you threw me off there, Scotty, because normally you go one person at a time. You go one, yeah, I go one. You threw it out there.
But you've given Braden 1 point.
I've given Braden 1 point. So my 2 points. And it's a little bit unusual to give you 2 points to a player that only played 17 minutes off the bench. But controversially, I'm doing it. It's Josh Reynolds. We talked about it a little bit earlier. I'm not going to read out any stats, but the direction, the energy coming off the bench, when I thought about who to give points to, I just couldn't go past the impact that Josh Reynolds had on the game. So you can have a go at me if you want for picking a bench player that played less than 20 minutes. That's fine. But I think given what he did for the team on the weekend, he deserves those points. So I'll read out the top five, Scotty, as the list is starting to get a little bit longer. And now that we're heading into the... somebody said we're over a third of the way into the season now, Scotty.
That's crazy. Get out of here.
How crazy. Max King is still leading on 13 points. In tied for second position, Jacob Carrazzo 7 and Corey Waddell on 7.
I reckon that's a bit of a controversy in the grandstand. It's really some people behind us. Jesus Christ.
Okay, so that's that's tied second. So we go into fourth position, Reed Marnie on 5. And in tied fifth position, Josh Adakar and Braden Burns on 4.
Braden! He's right at the top. Watch out. He plays one game.
I think Brayden has been the bonus point. He's taken advantage of the bonus point system.
Doesn't matter how. You just got to get there.
One game and into the top five. Again, I think we've said this a couple of times over the last couple of years, Scotty. Does that say how good Brayden's going in that one game that we lost? Or does that just talk about how bad the team may be travelling?
I reckon it just says how good the team was travelling. They were sharing the points.
Yeah, well, there's that too. Plus, I think even from that top five, two players had gone injured.
Yeah, so. But I do want to say on a more serious note, Brayden Burns, you talk about changes. Before we get to the moments in the game that we're talking about, contentious moments, which you have a few opinions, I know you do. Brayden Burns, if he continues this form, he could play himself into a centre spot. I'm not convinced Jake Avrilla was fully fit on the weekend either. There was a few moments where he looked like he had some open space, and I thought Jake, with a fit knee, would cause more of a headache, and he just didn't seem to really cause the headaches. He was just making those metres and just getting tackled pretty easily. But I think Brayden Burns is a better centre than Jake Avrilla is. Yes, Jake Avrilla's got speed to burn, and Paul Adamoti is at the moment. I feel Paul is going to be a great centre. I really do. I think he's going to be terrific for the club. But do you put him down because he's still young? Does that shoot his confidence that he's playing New South Wales Cup? And then have someone like Brayden Burns, who I think is at this current point a better player, a more all-rounded player, a more consistent player. Because Brayden Burns is actually quite a powerful runner that nobody, I don't feel like really gets highlighted in him. Enough.
And he probably starts at centre if it wasn't for his ankle concern at the start of the year.
Yeah, and he played fullback in the trials, and I thought he played really well at fullback. Or does that happen to him? Actually, get himself a fullback again.
Well, that's the one position of the spine that we haven't spoken about today.
And that's where I was going to go next. So, Hayes, I think he's a talent, but I don't know. I've just not seen the push support. Some of his moments, like the Will Kennedy try where the jump. He didn't look interested in even jumping in that. He just kind of just sat there and was like, whoop.
Yeah, he did do a bit of a leap. I don't blame him for that. I blame the defensive set for that. But yeah, go on.
Oh, yeah, no. When we look back at the try, you could have said, what could have went different? He had the four other tackles over there. What could have went different? Winning a tackle, slowing the play of the ball down, not getting them falling on the thing. That's where my biggest concern is. But we still have to highlight what Hayes could have done better. His jump was kind of like, I'm in the air because I have to be, but it didn't feel like he was. But then, yeah, it's saying that, like, it shouldn't have happened, and I can kind of see mentally, like, why. But, yeah, it felt like he could have maybe done a better effort because he just got knocked over. And there was no real swing at the arm that you see from the elite fullbacks. So hopefully, he can use it as a learning curve for him. So, because you would see, like, if someone like Burst, they got leaped, which doesn't happen often, he would be playing at your arm or playing at the board to try to make it go free. No, he just didn't. He just kind of fell to the ground and just watched it, like, try to get a good try, though. Good scored.
Yeah, I guess with the fullback position, if you're going to replace him, you've got to replace him with someone who's better, right? And up until, unless you count Avarillo, who is obviously playing injured at the moment, and Serrato's admitted that there are quite a few players playing injured, there hasn't really been anyone better to put him in there. So perhaps Burns back. Maybe when Correa's and Adekar come back, maybe Burns does go to fullback. But yeah, I think up to this point, there hasn't really been an obvious player that's playing better at that position to knock Hayes off that perch.
That's a fair call. That's a good response. I'm still playing him as coach. I just thought it was a talking point between fans. If I'm a coach at the moment, I'm playing him because even if Brayden Burns.
Because ideally, we'd want more from our fullback, right? We want more bigger influence on the game. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think also Brayden Burns has had that ankle injury all year. all that little ankle complaint and stuff. So even if Brayden Burns was the better fullback at this current point, I think, you know, playing him on the wing might be just a bit better, especially like he's just got back into top grade, you know, just to ease him in a little bit less, a little bit less running and stuff. So
now, Karaz is at a car a few weeks away anyway. So by the time they come back, hopefully he's all good. Maybe he does go to fullback. Yeah.
Maybe Adekar ends up there.
I would have thought this would have been the year, Scotty. I see Adekar as an out and out winger, one of the elite wingers in the game, obviously, but a winger out and out, right? But I thought heading into this year, this would be the year that he gets a crack. He gets a crack at that fullback position to see what he can do, given the squad that we had. But Serrato went a different way.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
All righty. I know you've been itching, Scott. Get to your contentious moments of the week.
Actually, I was going to start with, but I want to start with the obstruction.
Yeah.
Outside corner, Flanagan would have been there if it wasn't run at the outside shoulder. I thought it was a 1-on-1 call. I thought it was pretty simple. Looked at it once, went, we're going to get the penalty. And we didn't.
Yeah, well,
why aren't we getting these obstruction penalties? That's twice it's happened to us for a try.
I'll give you my journey on this. So at the stadium, clear obstruction. He's run to the outside shoulder of Flanagan. He's made contact with the defence. He's knocked him over, and then Will Kennedy runs through the same gap that the lead runner ran for. However, then I got home and watched the mini. And watching the mini, I could hear, obviously, the commentators and whatnot, and I could actually hear clearly what the bunker was saying. So the bunker said this, right? Flanagan puts an arm out to make contact with the defense and does not slide. So he does not slide his body towards where the ball is, and therefore he's not trying to make a tackle on the outside defenders. So I was like, okay, so you got your lead runner running at a gap. Flanagan's put his arm out to initiate contact, right? And I was kind of going to come on the podcast tonight, Scotty, and say, you know what? It's very technical. It's very unfortunate that it's happened to us, but I think it's technically correct. Until I watched the Dolphins versus the Titans. Thing happened, and it was an obstruction, and it was a penalty, and now I have no idea what an obstruction is.
That's what I was going to say. Thank you for bringing it up. Also, epic game, by the way.
For who? Not for the Titans.
No, I just meant, as in just like, you talk about, you're watching the Titans, you get a bit excited, they're absolutely beltering a team, and you know, you don't really see that often with the Titans, and then, oh, they lost. Classic Titans fashion.
Record
rundown. Anyway. But yeah, that's what I was going to say, was that the following day, I was watching that game, and I went, well, that's going to be a try, right? Because I'm just going to play last night. It's almost a replay. Just a few, you almost take the jerseys and swap the jerseys around, and that's the only difference is the colours of the jerseys being played.
And I'm going to bring up a tweet that I saw, Scotty. I can't remember who tweeted it. It was obviously a Bulldogs fan. So if you are one of those people that follow on social media and listen, thank you. But also reach out and we'll give you credit next week because I can't remember who said it. But I saw the tweet. It was to Gus, I think, and it was saying something along the lines of, technically it's a correct call, but how come that call only happens against us?
Yeah. Different call, not even 24 hours later.
Definitely feels that way at least, doesn't it? We might be biased watching the game from blue and white eyes, but it does seem that those type of calls only seem to happen against us. And I'm a bit worried, Scotty, because Graham Annesley came out and said referees are not scared to put two players from one team in the bin after the Payne Haas fiasco on the weekend. And my first initial reaction was, for me, was, shit, it's going to happen to us. You watch.
Yep.
It will be us. We will be the example. So next week, the NRL can say, see? We're not scared of doing it.
Yes. But yeah, that was the one. So to me, I'm with you now. Like I watched the replay only on my phone. So maybe if I got a bigger screen and watched it off the
Think if you watch it on a bigger screen, take yourself away from the emotion you just watch what it is. You hear the reasoning from the bunker. You go, you know what? I think that's a pretty technical but fair call. But it happens in the very next game, actually. No, it wasn't. Sorry, we played the first game on Saturday. It happens the very next day.
Yeah,
it's like an action replay, and they call it an obstruction. So, two things in rugby league that I don't know, Scotty. I don't know what a hip drop is, and I don't know what a obstruction is.
Well, I'm with you. I'm with you there. Anyway. I'm with you there because we've got to play a sin bin falling off a tackle. Into the hip drop.
Yeah, both things have happened against us. Fantastic. I suppose the other thing you got to bring up, Scotty, is the Nico Hines thing. My opinion's changed on this as well. I'm going to stick to, but you go ahead.
Nico, to me, like, does he hate the Bulldogs? Because let me take you back to Declan Casey's debut. He was carrying on like an idiot after him being knocked out. And that's when my opinion changed. Like, Nico does all this amazing thing off the field. All this amazing work off field, all this amazing work in community, all this amazing thing. But geez, he looks like such an ass on the field. Because you do not cheer someone being knocked out, which he was doing. But the knees in the back, like in a surrender position.
Yeah, so I might just jump in here because, again, put the big screen on, Scotty. In that instance, he's actually standing over the player on the ground, and Kyle Flanagan grabs him by the shoulder and throws him on top of the Bulldog player on the ground.
Does he?
He does. So watch it again or put it on the big screen, get the replay up, and go to that moment. I was filthy at the ground because it looked like he just dropped his knees into the back of the Bulldogs player, no penalty, no nothing. I was fuming. I wanted Tevita Pengo Jr. on the field just to run directly at him for revenge. I saw it once on the big screen at home, Scotty, and went, shit, it was Flanagan's fault.
Flanagan's a cheeky little prick too.
Yeah, so he threw, that's why Hines went after Flanagan in the scuffle. Yeah, so that's what happened there. Do you have anything else for us?
Two more. Declan Casey gets nearly run off the ball by Jesse Ramien.
Yeah, I think the referees just missed that. I think they just didn't see it.
Yeah, but that was a very crucial moment. What could have changed, like having another set of six in their own end. And it was one of the most obvious ones, what annoyed me. Jesse Ramien changed direction into Declan. It's not like the classic, I want to run towards the ball, but make sure the person over my shoulder, you know, if I run towards the ball, he ran away from the ball. Like, you're looking at 101 stuff. Like, that is a 101.
If you've only seen that game on TV, you might have missed that because it was a kick in play. It was a long way, probably about 20 metres away from the fullback. So I don't know if the TV cameras got that. But, yes, he definitely clearly ran right in the way of Declan Casey, knocked him off his feet.
Yeah, it was. And you could tell it wasn't Milton because Declan had no idea what was happening. Sometimes a player can run into the back of someone. Declan was running and then boom, and then he was on the next minute on the ground. We're in those classic moments where you're running straight and then next minute you're looking up at the sky because you've been knocked over.
I know the next one.
And Joshy Reynolds, is that?
Yeah.
That was absolute bullshit. Like, that was so obvious that you saw Sharks players drop their heads thinking there's going to be a penalty here, and then being surprised. Like, at the ground, that's what I don't know if you saw it, but a few closer to our end, heads kind of dropped like, oh, we've got to do another set of defence here.
Yeah, it's the one where he goes and puts a grubber kick in behind the first line defence and the defence close in on Reynolds and knock him down. Yep, definitely believe that should have been a penalty. But I will say quite often in... They must have I don't know if this is true or not, but the referees must have some sort of like, because when that happens at the end of a match, the defensive team quite often gets away with it, don't they? If that happens with a team chasing points towards the end of the match, the defensive team, I don't know, it seems to be a bit of a trend quite often, get away with that penalty. It happens even or early in the first half, quite often see the penalty, but if it's a team close to the siren, doing its best to chase down some points. Quite often see that one let go.
Because I don't think Josh Reynolds was very happy with that call. Because full time comes, he is giving an almighty spray to Chris Sutton.
Yeah.
He's leaving the ground and he followed him with the spray. I don't know if it's a range of those different decisions that we spoke about that, you know, it all piled up on him. Or if it was just that one decision, because that was obvious. The Sharks players were conceding the fact that it's going to be a penalty.
Well, like I said earlier, there's a lot of frustration in the crowd. It's almost to the point where the fan base, you can feel it in the stands. The level of frustration at the moment is higher than I think I've ever seen it for a regular season, sort of midway through the regular season. There's a lot of frustration in the stands. A lot of it seems to be directed to the referees. Interesting stat, I thought, Scotty, because I didn't realize this until after the game. Penalty count and set restarts combined, 7-7.
Yeah, no, I looked at that.
That was it. Didn't see that one coming, so interesting. And also, Bulldogs made less errors than the Sharks. Sharks made 13 errors to 11. So, yep, Sharks definitely not playing as well as they were last year.
But our errors seem to be the errors at times we can't afford to have them. I know, like, an error is never a good thing, but we'll be on the attack. Like, Reid, Marnie, you spoke about this incident earlier, right? We're on the attack. We probably had a bit of momentum. We're behind on the thing. We can't, you know, you can't afford to drop ball. And he rolls the ball like a lawn bowl on the carpet at the Core Stadium, you know, on the green, causing a knock-on. Obvious decision, correct decision. But, like, that is a moment of the game.
Yeah.
It's never ideal moments, but, you know, if you're winning 12-0 and you drop the ball, not the be-all end-all, or 18-0. No, it's not the be-all end-all.
Yeah.
That situation, we cannot afford anyone to drop the ball or drop the... Ryan Sutton. Not to target him.
He did have a lot of errors.
These errors were in key moments when on the attack. Where we couldn't afford to drop the ball, you know, we need something, bang. And then you just felt the balloon's been deflated. It's just all the air of the balloon's gone. You just looked at the Sharks. They looked a bit more like the chest were up a bit more after some of those errors. It's just those moments. It's just those when we seem to make an error, it seems to be at the wrong time all the time.
Yeah. All right, going on to next week, we don't have the team lineups. It is Monday night, but we play the Dragons on Sunday at 4:05 p.m. in the Gong. Always good to be down in the Gong. Scotty, is it too far to say it's a must-win game?
No, I think it is, because look at some factors. We can't say how the Dragons played this week, because it's a Monday and they play Tuesday because of Anzac Day. So we can't use the reference. But then you can't use that reference anyway, because don't be surprised the Dragons pull up a win against the Roosters. They always seem to find a way. Those games always seem to find a way. They're great games of football to watch. They're always entertaining as a neutral. It's always a special occasion, but also the players live for it. Both teams live for it, and they put a grandstand finish on fire. No matter what kind of happens, it's always a grandstand. It feels like a grandstand finish every time.
Well, Scotty, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there.
You're there tomorrow?
I'm there.
Oh, that's awesome. Enjoy. but it's going to be... So, like, it's got... I can't see it any other way for whatever reason. I can't tell you who's going to win. Try to tip and form on that one. But in saying that, the teams from recent memory seem to drop the week after.
Yeah, like possibly.
For those two. We got the Dragons on a short turnaround, number one. We got them on a short turnaround.
We play Tuesday to Sunday. It's not that short.
No, but it's still like we got over a week to rest.
Mm-hmm.
We're already preparing for this week.
Yeah.
Like, we're in day two of preparations for this week. The Dragons haven't even played their game yet. But, like, in saying that, it's like playing the Sunday and Friday game. It is short. But in saying that, the Dragons lose in a close one. There's nothing better. I remember hearing from Rennie Matua, nothing better than losing. Not saying there's a lot of things, but when you lose a game on Sunday, or, you know, the thing, you want to be out there to make amends for what's happened, right? So my thing is, I reckon we should win this. We should be looking at a game we should win.
I reckon we can win it too. We've definitely got the players and the way we're playing at the moment to be able to beat the Dragons. The way I'm looking at it, though, Scott, is that the Dragons are currently on 6 points in 13th spot. So they've only had the two wins this year. And regardless of what happens tomorrow, they won't have more wins than us heading into it. You've talked about the short turnaround and all that. I think, you know, this is going to be a little bit of a big statement, but if we lose this weekend, I think that almost nails us as a bottom five side in 2023. It'd have to take a big run late in the season to come out of that when our players come back. But if we were to win this one, we could put the ledger back to 4 wins, 5 losses, start to get a little bit even, heading into a couple of weeks where some players will start to slowly come back all of a sudden. You get enough back at the right time, get a couple of wins during Origin, we're 8th.
Well, I was looking at this on Twitter earlier, and I reckon you're 100% right. We got the Dragons, winnable game. Now, does Franklin Pelé return? We don't know. But apparently he should be returning for Magic Weekend at the very least. Yep. We got the Raiders. Also a winnable game.
Yep.
Not saying we're not favorite. We got the Warriors at a core. Let's turn the tables on them a little bit. We almost beat them. You probably argued that, say, a core actually gets officiated properly. They lose the Warriors at a packed Mount Smart. Now they're going to come to the Bulldogs game with more Bulldogs fans there than the Titans. Now, I saw someone say, before we go into a bye, so I'm using the bye as the breaker here. We're not going past the bye. I heard someone say, we've got round 9, so we've got 1, 2, 3, it's 4 games, that we need to win 3 of these 4. And to get into the bye with 3 of the 4. I would imagine you're looking at that, you probably say you drop the Warriors game the way they're playing. They seem to get a little bit better. They're pretty good side. And I don't mind them going well. I like the Warriors. But you look at that, we need to win at least 3 of the 4. So you've got to take the Dragons. If you either drop the Raiders or the Warriors, that's the only one. But
you know what, Scotty? I'm actually going to take that back one extra step. We've got to win at least 2. I reckon if you go 2-2, right, that will put us on an overall record of 5 wins, 7 losses. Into the bye, players coming back.
Yeah, fair enough. Because
that means we're only two behind on the win-loss ratio without having probably our best team on the field yet. And we have a good second half of the season, we could push for finals. But the point that I think you're making overall here is that the next 4 weeks heading into the bye is crucial period for the season.
Yes, no, that's the point I'm making. And I saw someone say that and I was like, 3 out of 4 was a bit harsh, but I could see where they're coming from because, you know.
Yeah, that's why I'm pulling it back to 2-2, because 5 wins, 7 losses, not terrible position given that injury toll.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, we need, you know, you look at the Titans and you probably look at the Dragons.
Yeah.
They have to be, you have to win. Not saying that the Titans, geez, they've got points in them.
But that's right? So, like, worst case scenarios, we do lose to the Dragons. The Raiders aim up and have a really good game against us. The Warriors are flying, and the Titans have a game like they did against the Dolphins, but they defend better. And all of a sudden, we're none and four.
They put that attack on for 80 instead of 40.
We're none and four quite easily, which then, again, I think brings the pressure back to this game against the Dragons. It's a must win, this game against the Dragons, for the overall season, but also for the next 4-week block, which is going to be very telling in the overall season. So it all comes back to Wollongong.
So be there Sunday. You're on the Bulldogs. It's a nice stadium.
That's right. Well, we normally finish off with the junior reps in the lower grades. However, we did that first because of the success in those grades, or most of those grades. So we need to find a way to sign off, and that might be the way to do it, Scotty. Go to Wollongong if you can, support the boys. I think it is a crucial game for us to win. I think it's must win for the Bulldogs. If we're going to have any chance of pushing for the top eight. Now, you can say, oh, yeah, but still most of the season to go and mathematically and all that. We're talking literal and what we're talking our injuries crisis. We're talking about what games are upcoming, as Scott just broke it down.
Yeah, very mental as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So be there if you can. Enjoy the game. We'll speak to you next week. Go to the Bulldogs.